Rejoice, dear listener, for your endless march through the internet has finally produced something to add meaning to your empty, meandering existence. Your friends at Idiots Discuss the Universe are digging up musical gems of the past and deciding whether they have any shine left or not. Welcome to Old Gold. PCP horse tranquilizer, man. Everybody wanted that still, but nobody could get it.
What's the deal with a Quaalude again? How is it different than an opiate?
Yeah, I think it is just an opiate.
Oh.
But it's a super hardcore, I don't know.
Okay. I don't know. So it's a downer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hmm. It's a downer. I never was very into the downers.
No. Me neither.
Always made me feel yucky.
Yeah. Same. I had a period in high school where I got my I had a cyst in my throat.
Mm-hmm.
I forget, it was like a peritonsillar abscess.
Was it from singing like Freddie Mercury too much?
Exactly. And smoking, you know, a little bit of everything.
Mm.
Like cigarettes,
crack
and weed,
cocaine.
And, you know, a little crack cocaine here and there. Never hurt nobody. A little crack cocaine. No crack. But, yeah, smoking all sorts of things and getting sick. And, yeah, I was in high school and I had this
not wearing a coat.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Being a general dumbass.
Yeah, being a general dumbass for sure.
Sorry, I'm just thinking about Spencer in high school.
Yeah, that was the thing, being a bit of a prick at all times, you know, but in a cool way. Yeah, so I got this abscess, you know, and it when I tried to swallow, it felt like knives, and they couldn't figure out what was wrong. It took them like a month, 2 months to figure out actually what it was, and at that point, it was like, oh, we need to operate on this right now. Like, it's like being in a doctor's office, like the normal doctor's office, and they're just like, oh, we're gonna work on this here now, like wait here, like we're gonna come back and we're gonna work, like,
right?
Okay. And you're like, yeah. Normally you're like, oh, when are we scheduling the surgery or whatever.
That's like, I had a tumor or something that showed up on my arm too at one time when I was a kid, and they're like, oh my god.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. They especially when you're young, they're like, oh, right away. And so, this will make sense with what we're talking about, I promise. They fucking sliced it open. Like, they got a nurse to sit on my knees, you know, and the doctor basically went in with a scalpel and this like suction tube and sliced open the back of my throat. It hurt like fucking bitch. I was out of school for a long time.
Wow.
Yeah. But during this time I was, prescribed Vicodin pills and codeine syrup, and oh boy did I start getting a hankering for that stuff when I was just home alone all day, just had my pain stuff. At first I really needed it, you know, but as time went on, like, I was getting better. I didn't need it, but I was taking it for fun.
Yeah.
You know, and then when I even started going back to school, I was like, oh, I need some, and it got bad. Like, it got to the point where I ground up probably 8 Vicodin into a milkshake and took that shit to school and was drinking it during class, you know, and just feeling dandy all the time. Huh. And then my parents saw that I was taking way more than I should. You know, when they looked at the bottle, they're like, what the fuck? And they took it away.
Good.
You know, took it away from me.
Yeah.
And I spent that night going through like what I assume are just like a fringe. I just went through like a night of withdrawals, basically, you know, of the cold sweats, like the fucking hot, oh God, like shitting my ass
off.
You're
lucky. You're lucky. You dodged a bullet.
I dodged a bullet. And I, after that, I realized after like a night's worth of, you know, mild withdrawals in the grand scheme of things, I was like, holy shit, this stuff is fucking evil.
Yeah.
You know, and,
it's not evil. It's just used in an evil way. It's prescribed in a careless manner.
Right.
And it's poorly regulated, but it is a huge tool. I mean, like the opioid drugs are a huge benefit to mankind.
They do provide a lot of relief. Believe me, I totally sympathize with that. But I do think that, the careless prescription of them and just having a substance that makes you feel so good that you don't have any problems or cares, like that to me is just like, inherently dangerous.
Like 80s goth music. A substance that makes you feel so good that you have no worries or cares.
Wait.
Because that's what we're going to be talking about today's episode of Old Cold.
Oh. See, when I think of 80s goth music, I think of amplifying all of your sorrows and your woes and all of the woe is me stuff and projecting it out onto everyone and letting everyone know.
I think of girls in porcelain white makeup with black and red and purple lipstick with
like that's cool
fishnet stockings and black witch dresses and pointy shoes dancing to The Cure at Alternative Night in Laramie, Wyoming, or Denver, or wherever it was that we were at. And that's what that makes me think of. Yeah.
That paints a much better picture than what I've got.
Yeah. Yeah. It brings back like memories of stuff that I did, I guess. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I understand that. And I understand how.
And I had to work.
It was that
I had
time.
To work to be at places that would play this overhead. You know what I'm saying? Like
right.
You still have to kind of go to places that'll play it, and it's kind of like a treat to be somewhere that's playing Bauhaus overhead.
The Lovecraft or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The Lovecraft is something that is like such a recent deal.
Right.
I guess there used to be Muddy's in Denver. There used to be this. Oh man, you would have loved this coffee shop in downtown Denver. It was like in the worst neighborhood of Denver, but it was like this outpost of like all the goths and freaky like artist
nice
guys, and it was called Muddy's.
Cool.
Man, we went there every time we went down to Denver. It was just so great. Books and just weird shit everywhere. Like, yeah, it's awesome. Awesome. So many creepy goth people there.
Oh, the creepy goth, they creep me out a lot of times.
Yeah.
And
I think you might get a little creeped out tonight.
I think I'm probably going to. But that being said, I think I also understand why this is such an awesome time for you and why that this music has a different connotation to you than it does to me, you know, which I think is like an interesting theme with Old Golds that we've been starting to tap into, is how that there's like this specific period in every human's life where they're, you know, they're in that perfect sweet zone of being intelligent yet still impressionable.
I think there are a couple of those periods.
You think so?
Yeah.
Well, okay. Granted, I could go with that for sure. I just think that, you know,
Let's name them for you.
Okay.
They're the bands that you love when you first become aware of popular music as being something that you like and helps you identify with who you're going to be, which is when you're like 9, 10 years
right,
old.
Right, 9, 10.
Who is that for you, Spencer?
That's Nirvana.
Okay.
And grunge music.
Okay, so that's that first round. And then like when you really get into it and you find like, okay, music helps me identify myself and this is my identity and this is who I am and I'm doubling down on this. In the bands for you at that period when you're about like 13, 14 are...
That was like Pantera, Metallica.
Slayer.
Even some like heavier, you know, Children of Bodom, Lamb of God, Gojira.
Yeah, you signed your contract with metal.
I did.
At that point.
I did.
And so you continued to that point. And then there's a period when you first fall in love... and you open your brain up to things that normally you would never like, but you find some way to love it because the endorphins are blowing through your brain and you're so head over heels.
Yes.
And that can happen maybe more than once.
Okay, sure.
But like that expands the palate in ways that is irreversible as well.
That was folk music for me. Like
there you
singer, go. Singer, songwriter, okay. Stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
Where I can like, now I can like listen to one of those things and I'll like start crying or some shit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
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 Well, what was it for you? So like 9, 10... On that first awareness, what would you say that was for you?
That would be the Beatles and Led Zeppelin.
Cool.
Yeah.
Rad. And then around 13, 14?
And also like Simon and Garfunkel. I guess that would be right in there too. Like that folk stuff. That was from being a little kid because my mom, you know,
that's
sort
like
of
forward-thinking iconic rock
Elvis,
music.
Elvis and like folk songs were like super part of like every day I listened to that sort of
right.
shit. Mm-hmm. I had like a collection of my uncle and my mom's 45 records in the basement, and I had my own room in the basement when I was an only child in those sweet, sweet short years. And I'd go down and like hang out in this bedroom in the basement with all my superhero glasses that I collected from Arby's or wherever they were giving away the superhero glasses. And, I would listen to Elvis and Everly Brothers and all these 50s and early 60s 45 records. And that's like super like the core of my musical tastes and what I knew and all that sort of stuff. And I gravitated to just whatever a little kid would love, you know, Purple People Eater and all those weird sort of songs too. But like Beatles and Led Zeppelin were like my first like...
That's
period.
When you knew. You
I knew.
Like, oh, shit, yes. There's something really
And then when
cool.
I was 13 years old, my friend Jason Stovall, Sid Pink, came back from a trip to, I don't remember where he went, L.A., maybe somewhere. He came back and he had a cassette tape of the Ramones, The Cure, Sex Pistols, Steve Jones. What else was on that? There's like a B-52 song. There was an OMD song, a New Order song. It was like this weird, like quick, like I'm going to make a tape, like steal a bunch of songs off of your, out of your music collection and put it on one cassette tape. Cause Jason Stovall was always terminally poor in those days. And for him to even have one cassette tape was like a miracle, but he brought it back and I got a copy of that. And I got a copy of The Cure, Kiss Me, Kiss Me, Kiss Me. And like, that was it. At that point, I was like just kind of the new wave alternative kid for the next. I still love Led Zeppelin and the Beatles and all that 60s music sort of stuff. And I had some hippie stuff going through that whole sort of thing. But that was still alternative back then.
Right.
Yeah. So like that was kind of a mix with as much of like that Brit, goth,
Brit rock,
new wave, no wave stuff that I could find in Casper, Wyoming.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And so then but then when I fell in love, I can't really say that because like she loved all that goth music too.
Oh, so it doubled it down for
right,
you.
Kind of doubled it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I think the connection between goth and punk is something that I've always thought is really fascinating. The overlap between, you know, and how
there
punk
is.
Music,
huge, yeah.
Yeah. How punk evolved into new wave in certain ways. And it's like people examining what it means to be punk and then deeming that the way that people are doing it is like now this parody of what it's meant to be punk. Like the Sex Pistols were punk and everything, but now it's just a bunch of bands copying the Sex Pistols. That's not fucking punk. That's following in someone else's footsteps, you know? So we're going to make it with computers and we're going to fucking wear weird makeup and we're going to, you know what I mean? I see how it's an extension of that, like the punk ideology in a way.
Explain it more.
Okay, so I guess with like new wave and whatnot,
right.
it's rebellious in the face of punk music coming into the world stage and into the mainstream in a way, you know, at least into the zeitgeist. Okay. Like, to me, it's like a response to that kind of music, you know, but with the same mentality, with that same rebellious ethos, it's a response to the, like, we're being nasty
and
whatever.
It's more of a nuanced, punk didn't work completely for everybody. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like that
sure.
dismal anger didn't work for everybody, and in a lot of ways, like the goth element.
Pass me the ashtray. Sorry, sorry to interrupt. Fuck.
In a way, like the goth thing and the new wave thing, like emphasize different elements of what punk really was. There's a certain sadness to the Sex Pistols too, and the Clash and all that stuff. There's a certain sadness as there's an anger, and the goth kind of took hold of that, and in the same way that there's a style to like the Sex Pistols, and there's a certain like and a fashion statement to the whole punk thing. And I think that's kind of what the new wave people took, is they kind of took this this new sound sort of thing, and kind of like took that as a freedom to kind of change things on it, on their change things in like the core sound of whatever rock and roll could be. And they also took the fashion, but they kind of left like all of the anger and all that stuff. They still wanted to party and have fun. You know what I'm saying? They wanted to go to concerts and have fun.
Right.
They didn't want to be angry and get attacked by, like, you know, skinheads.
Right. They still wanted to be subversive. You know, there's still this subversive quality to goth music and new wave music that maybe had its birth in like a very overt way with punk music, you know.
And a lot of times, like preceding generations that are just like a couple like of musical generations, which happen like every 3 or 4 years, 5 years or something like that, you know, they take pleasure in becoming like softer and more effeminate than the original version of whatever the genre is. And there's a lot of like hardcore rock and rollers that loved like, you know, Chuck Berry and those early rockers, and they thought that the Beach Boys were a bunch of horse shit because they're a bunch of pretty boys with their harmonies and all that crap. And, you know, they thought that like all that was a bunch of horse shit, that people were taking their music and like, and the same thing with punk, you know, like Blondie and the Talking Heads and all these other bands are taking like what we're doing and they're turning it into like this bubblegum happy shit that is not what we want, you
making
know?
It more accessible.
But that makes the younger kids in the family super happy that their older brother thinks that what they're listening to is sort of horse shit, you know, or that makes them mad.
Happens with almost every genre, I think, that I can think of. And so it's interesting to hear that. Goth and new
generations, like my generation was the first generation. X is the sense that we're the smorgasbord generation, that we were kind of, I kind of started the repeating pattern where we started to go through like the 50s nostalgia hit in the 80s, you know, and like then the 60s nostalgia hit in the late 80s and the early 90s. And it's been kind of going in this repeat pattern, and those nostalgia things come back and affect like the music that's being created. And it's kind of become like this big, like you can be any kind of music fan now and nobody looks down at you. And there's nothing that's this prevailing music form that is just like all encompassing. And if it doesn't sound like this, it's not that, you know, maybe other than the trap beat, there's really no sound of the 2010s that you can put your finger on. You know, it's all over the place. Everything has gotten its own movements, and different things are going on. It's way more varied and compartmentalized than it's ever been.
That is true. I would say the trap beat is going to be the iconic thing.
The
rap and trap and all those influences, with, you know, they reach into pop music and,
it's the trap beat, and before with Kanye and the vocal what am I trying to say,
the auto-tune.
That's also like a key thing that will let people know what time of,
definitely,
yeah,
it's gonna be interesting to see. So back when this was happening, back in when punk was having these sort of disputes with new wave and goth music, what would you necessarily have called those genres? Like,
I was not a punk.
Right.
I mean, I knew kids that were punk, and I was kind of friends with some of them, but like I didn't care for punk music at that time. I mean, in Wyoming, like West Coast punk was like coming up, you know, Black Flag was huge when I was in high school and that sort of stuff, GBH and all that sort of stuff. And I like some of that stuff now, but at that time, like I was not into that at all, you know? And so we did not like jive as far as like the music that we listened to.
Well, what I was going to ask is like, do you remember when you first heard it, new wave music that is like particularly Bauhaus, I guess, for an example, like, did you think it was crazy or weird or like bad or you know what I mean? Or just kind of like you didn't get it when you first heard it, or was it kind of the thing away?
It blew me away. It's like, this is the music that I've been looking for, you know, because I loved like the Led Zeppelin songs about the hobbits and No Quarter and like that dark sort of like, I loved like Paint It Black by the Rolling Stones. And there were certain elements of music, Sympathy for the Devil, I love that song. And you know, I was always attracted to that sort of thing. And then I heard Bauhaus and I'm like, oh, this is like that over the top thing that you need when you're like that age. I can't remember how old I was. I was probably 15 maybe when I heard Bauhaus for the first time, 16. And this, the visuals and like the posters and like the stuff that they had were so like weird and mysterious and like European and like it was just weird, you know. And like, and the first song I heard was Bela Lugosi's Dead, of course, you know. That was
the big cut,
absolutely. One of my prized possessions is like the 12-inch single of Bela Lugosi's Dead from back in the day. I mean, that's something that I hunted down, and I don't know, it's probably not worth anything, but it's
no
awesome.
I would say now it's like that awesome. Whole all that vinyl stuff and is getting a lot of traction.
It's still got the fucking plastic on it. It's fucking awesome.
Nice.
Yeah,
wow. So with,
but we're not going to be listening to Bela Lugosi's Dead,
right? Because
you've heard that one, obviously.
Yeah, I have heard that one, but I'm still very much a novice and, you know, someone trying to get into this kind of music. While I'm not in one of those very influential time periods in my life, you know what I mean? Like, you know how, like, when you're in those periods, you find stuff and you're like blown away by it. But then when you're not, it's a lot harder to get in there. You
and
know what I mean?
And I understand that. You know? And I guess that what I can say to that is that I now enjoy trap rap.
Yes, me too.
And before I started this podcast, I made fun of trap rap.
Oh, yeah.
That's as much as I knew enough about it to make fun of it.
Yeah. But I think
I was in the Barry Quinn boat.
Sure.
I thought it was just all sort of horseshit.
I think that's how it starts with, for a lot of folks, that's how it started with me when my friend showed me some of these songs back in like, you know, it really starting around like 2010 or whatever, like Gucci Mane and whatever, like where you're like, you can't even, that was when
I remember you, like you were at the shop at that time and I remember you complaining about it.
Well,
having a hard time digesting it.
Yeah. Yeah. That was some of the newer stuff. Once it's become a really, really big thing and definitely having a hard time digesting it, but then kind of realizing I'm taking it and myself too seriously. Yeah. And then when I let go, I'm like, oh, this is like fun music to, and then you get deeper and you find people who are doing really cool stuff with it, you know, and
then you start kind of doing some really cool stuff with
it. And then I want to do it because I'm like, this is the music that makes me feel good, you know, or cool, or like, at least it kind of reminds me to just stop thinking every once in a while.
It scratches an itch that you didn't know you had until you heard it.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so I get that though with Bauhaus and with this kind of music, how that is a very specific itch. And I know I have friends who are like deep into this stuff. There's people in my generation who just worship this music, you know.
Really, I guess that's true, because they wouldn't let me into Lovecraft last time I tried to go because it was all full of youngsters,
right? There's like a whole scene that is a whole.
At least I think it was because of that. Maybe because I was just too old. Me and my buddy Dan were too old.
What? That's fucking ageism. They can't do that bullshit.
Ageism. Yeah, that happens.
Weird. With private clubs.
Welcome to Earth, Spencer.
Dude, ageism can't happen.
Go to Europe sometime and try to go to some fancy places. Yeah, absolutely.
They'd be like, oh, no. Excuse me.
Oh, I like your watch. Oh, but no more room in the restaurant for you.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
So yeah. let's cut to the chase here.
Yeah,
Spencer.
Yeah. All right, so
we're gonna listen to a track off of the album Mask, and you can see the cover of Mask. You know, it's kind of like an early Radiohead sort of thing. It's got the bear going on. That's a classic album cover. That's great. I mean, it's just like something that you don't see every day when you're, it's 1980 something in Wyoming. Yeah. I didn't get this album in 1981. I got this album several years later. But we're going to listen to the fifth song on the album called Hollow Hills, which kind of ties into what we were talking about before with the Hollow Earth. Yes.
I remember when you came up, you were like, oh, I know what song that I'm going to show you.
Yeah, I had the little light bulb come up. And yeah, absolutely.
That's good for continuity.
Yeah, good for continuity. So everybody that tunes in regularly and is following an order, like I know there are some people that do it in order because that's the only way they can do it. And we applaud those thorough fuckers.
You are a champion.
Yes, you are a champion. And we salute you. And that's a little treat that we do because we kind of follow up on one of our promises. That doesn't happen every day.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Follow up on promises. Actually, before we play this, I think you should do like a trap rap mix on our Spotify page.
Oh.
I think that would be really cool. I would really like to listen to it.
Okay. Did I promise that at some point?
No. I'm just suggesting it. I think it would be great. I personally would like that. For me.
Sure. I'd be happy to. Maybe I'll do that right after this.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Cool.
That'd be great. All right. So do you have it up? Speaking of Spotify, do you have it up on Spotify
for us to go? I do have the song.
Okay. So Hollow Hills, number. This was not a single for the album. This is just a deep track.
Deep cut. That's when you know an album's good, is when the deep cuts are good. That's how you know.
Mm-hmm. And that's one thing about Bauhaus is almost all of their deep truck cuts are at least interesting enough to make it through a bunch of times.
Let's check it out.
Painful sound and wild voices ignored. Ill luck, disaster, the one reward. Violating sanctity of Superman's hill, so sad.
So sad.
Yeah, I have to admit, after our conversation before getting into this song, I kind of went into this like with the idea that I was going to listen to it as though it was like the first time I was ever listening to it, and maybe I had never had no associations with this or any sort of thing. And it is sort of like ridiculous in a way. You know, I laughed. You saw me laughing.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like, oh my God, this is so like, you know, over the top. You know, like, wow. You know, it's drama kid.
Yeah. It's got a very, especially with the vocals, it's just got a very dramatic, you know, I'm so sad. Like you just, like you're crying while you're singing kind of a thing or you know.
Yeah. And the lyric is brilliant though. I mean, the words and the stuff that he's talking about is so cool. Cause he's talking about, you know, like the elven races that live out under the earth, you know, and how they're stuck there. It's so metal, Spencer.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
like
very
fucking
metal.
So I was kind of hoping that you had the lyrics up.
No,
I
should have done that.
I didn't mention anything because I thought that you just would do that. But like,
no,
it's so like,
I'm a person that needs
like
the lyrics in front of me too.
Proto death metal sort of topic stuff that they talk about, you know, and it's very awesome in that way. You would really, really resounded with you, but man, I had to admit that it was like really kind of, and I'm sort of sad because it's a poor representation of Bauhaus. Maybe we should like listen to one more real quick.
Yeah,
that's got a little bit more bite to it.
I'm down to listen to more, but I got to say, I don't think that it was bad by any means.
Yeah.
I don't think it was bad. I think that they're like, after listening to that, it's really cool. I think like there's some interesting things about it that I don't, that like that don't like gel with me.
Yeah.
Like the vocals and the bass being like kind of out of key with each other. I'm pretty sure the bass line going through the whole time had one particular note that was out of tune, you know, just slightly out of tune. But I get how that's kind of part of the aesthetic that comes from punk, which is where it's like, you know, you don't have to be a virtuoso, you don't even have to be like good at your instrument, because like I care about what I'm saying so much that I don't fucking sit around and practice. I just sit around and like be sad, and then I just happen to pick up this instrument and this song came out. Like, it's got a vibe that's kind of like that.
But these guys are deep, like coming from the art rocking or side of things. I mean, that's out of tune because that's what they're doing.
And that's like the benefit of the doubt that I try to give these kind of acts, you know, because it's all about an intention. If you think about a band that's their guitar's out of tune and they don't know that it's out of tune and it was just an accident, like that's a fuck up. And like, that's something you would say is like, like it makes you question like how much did they really, I don't know. It's just like how much thought really went into this if your guitar's out of tune and you didn't know. But then if you deliberately untune your instrument because you want
the production of this song that it's well crafted.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Definitely. I'm not.
What do you think of the guitar style? Like that really creepy. Like
The drone.
Yeah.
And the droning and the. Because the main thing I think was a bass. Was the main thing a bass? I thought that main line.
That one. Yes, but they're also that, just like that kind of that ethereal guitar.
I like
with
it a lot.
Drone that goes through it.
I think that's honestly been one of the most influential things to come out of this genre of music is the guitar tones and the drum tones
and a lot of like, you know,
production.
Like that Sonic Youth and stuff kind of became accessible to a lot of people because of some of this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, this kind of did kind of move things towards the noise side of stuff at times and kind of made that open the door to that.
Yeah.
You know, I know a lot of people that were goth people that moved towards the noise thing and the heavy industrial sort of thing from this as well.
Yes.
You know, this was a good launching point.
It sounds unhinged the whole time.
Yeah.
And, you know, thinking of that as being an intentional thing that they're doing, like if they have the capabilities of playing in tune instruments and seeing like singing perfectly on key and whatnot, and they choose to do it this way, it's very powerful, you know. It's like, because it sounds like someone seasoned doing something intentionally, like that would go against their own impulses as like an artist, like, you know, to sing badly or to sing like even slightly off key or whatever like that, or to try to like be vulnerable enough to like fuck up and like own it kind of in a take, like that's its own skill, you know.
And kind of this goes back again, like the Smiths bring that to thing that Morrissey had. That
was this around the same time?
Yes, absolutely. This is a little bit, I mean, everyone kind of rode the Smiths coattails in a way, like and the Cure a little bit.
Yeah.
But the Smiths were the first one to kind of come out with that super English sounding that wasn't the you know, that London accent that was sort of acceptable with like Hermits and stuff. But even the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and all that stuff, they Americanized the way that they sang. And Morrissey came out and he sang in that super strange Northern English accent that and it was in a super traditional like English style of vocal, and it just opened it up in a way that it's super down in my headphones.
Is it too quiet? How about now?
Better.
Cool.
And that really opened up for vocalists like Robert Smith and this dude, Peter Murphy, and a bunch of other ones that were allowed to kind of become that who they were, when that was become more accessible and more acceptable on this side of the Atlantic, because those people had always existed in English pop music. But if the vocal was too accented and sounded too strange, it didn't make the transfer over. But this was a time that a lot of those people were so hungry for this type of music coming out of England that these accents became like part of pop music. And he noticed it in a lot of other 80s music later on in the 80s, that weird English accents become like the norm, and then Australian music becomes kind of cool, and people that have like accents kind of start showing up in pop music in a way that they hadn't shown up until like the 80s.
Hmm.
Men at Work.
Yeah.
I mean, various other, yeah.
And then it gets to the point where Americans are, and everyone's trying to do that accent. You know, yes. Even if it's not, that it just becomes part of the genre.
Yeah, it's interesting.
That's really cool.
Yeah,
that's really that is very cool. And were the guys from Bauhaus involved in any other projects beforehand?
Beforehand, no. I believe this was their first. This was their first thing. I mean, maybe some other bands that never made anything, but this was the first big one. And then they went on to several that I'm sure you know about. Love and Rockets and Tones on Tail
and Peter Murphy. That's the connection, because I knew that there was some sort of like a bunch of groups related to Bauhaus.
They broke up.
It happened after.
Peter Murphy went on his way and had a long career as Peter Murphy, and then three other members went on, and they were Tones on Tail, and then they were Love and Rockets, and then they were the B-Men. Was it the B-Men or the Bumblebees or whatever?
They would just keep changing it?
No, the bees was when they would dress up in bee outfits, and that was the kind of their alter ego band.
What the fuck?
And then Love and Rockets was one of their main bands, and Tones on Tail was one of their main bands.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. So it was two separate projects.
One after the other. One after the same three members. Hmm.
But, interesting. Yeah. That's cool.
Both great, I think.
Yeah, I love those. See, that's Tones on Tail is where I'm like super on board.
Bauhaus is where it's at, and I'm still trying to get you to do this. So we're going to listen to one more song.
Yeah.
And this one's going to be off of the album that came off the year after this last one. The Sky's Gone Out is the name of the album, and I think that the best song for us to listen to is Spirit, which is the fifth song. Have you heard that one before, Spirit?
I have not, no.
All right, let's listen to Spirit.
I could be with you, or waiting in the wings. Lift your heart with soaring sight, cut down the puppet strings. I tap you on the shoulder and whisper, girl in red. Strip your
Well, they love their audience.
They do.
Yeah.
For the last time, this song about that.
Yeah, it's almost like they hate their audience.
Yeah, it's an odd deal.
That's what I got.
What did you think?
Again, I liked it a lot, but I thought, and this is just where I'm coming from, I thought the guitars were the standout feature of the track. And the vocals and the lyrics, I was reading along this time, and I like the lyrics. I think they're very cool.
The delivery of Peter Murphy's delivery is too much for you.
It was the delivery combined with, like, it's like the theatrical delivery with the theatrical lyrical allusions or whatever you call them, like the theme is like, we're in the theater, like all this stuff, and he's doing it well and convincingly, and it is like weird and disturbing, but I can still just like the theater kid thing has just never been my cup of tea. Like, even when Queen does it, you know, when they do it too much on their albums, I am not into it, like, I don't know why, because I don't knock it from a technical or anything like that standpoint. It's just the sound has never, appealed to me, but they're like, this is going to sound hella, music criticky, but they're juxtaposing that with the guitars and the droning and the dissonance and the general gnarliness, which I think is what ultimately makes this work. But I think that the guitar is key, because, and I hear things that that guitarist is doing that metal bands are doing today, or, he's bringing in sounds and techniques that are still around, and and same with a vocalist. But to me, the guitar was like the standout part of that track.
Okay.
So I liked it overall, but the vocals are continually the kind of deal breaker of why I can't fully, like, why I don't think I would listen to this, like, you know,
on purpose.
A ton, yeah. Like, I like Tones on Tail a lot more. I really liked that, but I think that's a lot of that's instrumental,
you
know.
Too. That's them too.
No,
the,
I know.
The Tones on, yeah, Tones on Tail.
But it's instrumental.
Yeah, a lot of it is.
Yeah, so I think
and
that's
it's a
why.
Different vocalist.
It is, yeah, it's a different vocalist. Mm-hmm. I think I got an issue with Peter Murphy.
Daniel
maybe.
Ash or the other guy.
Yeah, maybe I'm not into Peter Murphy. I don't know.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I think I do like the vocalist for Love and Rockets better than Peter Murphy too.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I do think that, like, musically and, like, artistically, like, Bauhaus was the peak.
Yeah.
Really.
I can see how this has set the stage and made the all the other stuff possible, you know?
And I think a certain amount of, like, artistic theatrics was still acceptable, was more acceptable back then than it was. It comes across as over the top now as... You could be like this total persona in a way back then that you couldn't be now with the 24-hour coverage of who you are.
Right.
Like, you couldn't pull off Ziggy Stardust today because you'd have to go to David Bowie at sometimes to go, like, take a shit, yeah. You know, and people would take that, you
like,
know,
like, oh, what's Ziggy
Instagram
tweeting paper. Today?
Right.
Yeah.
So it would, it's a different cultural landscape than it was then, and they were like these dark vampire theatric things that just showed up, and, like, you know, that was the image they cultivated at that time, I think, too, like, you know, the vampires.
Yeah,
of, yeah.
And I think that all that shit is awesome and fantastic, and I think as an entire package, Bauhaus is it. You know, they are the full thing.
But I do see how for you that they are more of like a historical. Well, that's something that I know about and I listen about, but it's not like something that I'll ever really go back and like super like dig into, but it's good to know that they existed and what they kind of did and
yeah
how they influenced.
I can't
the
say
stuff
that I won't go back and dig into it because I don't want to make like some statement like that because I like it enough to be fascinated with the, you know, musicians involved.
Well, this is the album that if you want to dig into it, like, The Sky's Gone Out is the album by them
cool.
that you want to do.
Word.
That's it for sure.
Yeah. I, you know, as always, I appreciate learning about this stuff because I'll always find something from a subgenre or any genre that I like,
right.
You know?
Right.
And so even if it's not Bauhaus, like, I love the Smiths, you know,
and you
I
can
love...
even hear some of these sounds like with the trap beat behind.
Oh,
it.
Totally.
And
with,
like,
those
yeah.
guitars though. Yeah. Like, you know, sampling that kind of stuff. I think people do that. I wouldn't be surprised if Bauhaus is in a trap sample somewhere, you
yeah.
know,
yeah.
and it's really yeah. cool. It's cool stuff. And,
I think it is. Yeah. Yeah. So thanks for listening. And thank you, Spencer, for listening.
Yeah.
And
thanks for showing
on
me
all of it. Yeah.
Thanks for showing
it's pretty
me.
Awesome stuff. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And this has been in our episode of Old Gold. I think it's pretty successful. We
I
bounced
think so.
Back from the Gene Loves Jezebel debacle.
Oh, boy.
The punishment.
Yeah.
The
punishment that was Gene
Poor
Loves.
Aaron, he wasn't ready for it.
No,
he wasn't ready for it. He was angry. He was panicking. He was panicking
good. It was good, though. I'm glad we got that on.
He thought it was going to be something really special.
He thought, yeah, I don't know what he thought. Because usually Aaron is ready for a joke,
quite,
a silly
he
time.
He felt quite betrayed, I felt.
He did, yeah. He wanted something good. He wanted something that was actually gold, not shit.
Yeah, yeah.
But we did this old switcheroo,
yeah,
the old one too.
It's radio gold.
That's
not
right.
Gold.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, everybody, thanks for tuning in. Check us out on our Spotify where you can listen to the songs by Bauhaus.
That's right.
Maybe we'll even put the full album of Sky's Gone Out in there somewhere.
Oh, for you.
Yeah. We're going to up the ante on Spotify.
That's right.
Thing.
We're going to up Spencer. The ante. Also go to iTunes and rate and review us. That would be muchly mm-hmm. appreciated. It
muchly.
Always helps with, you know, other people finding out about it and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And as always, thank you for listening. This has been another episode of Idiots Discuss the Universe, Old Gold, where we go into the past and find old musical gold. And I'm Spencer. That's Craig. And, you know the drill. You know.
That's Craig.
That's the thing. That's Craig. That's Greg over there. That's Greg.
That's me.
Put that on a shirt.
Idiots Discuss the Universe is recorded in the IDTU studios located in Portland, Oregon. All opinions and commentary has been carefully researched by the technicians and scholars of IDTU Research Academy, and therefore should be greeted with healthy skepticism and disbelief. No idiots were harmed during the making of this podcast.